Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one show, the only show, the premier show on the entire world wide web. We talk about things like fantasy, sci-fi, movies, TV, books, robots, space lasers, swords, horses, women who draw from the primordial force at the center of the earth and use it to blast fun, colorful streams out their fingers. This is Take the Black. How are you doing, Daniel?
I'm doing great. I'm ready to talk about all those things you just said and more, like knights, like trials by combat, like maybe also some sorceresses. So yeah, no, I'm good. I'm very good. How are you, Dan? And how is everybody in the chat? Nice to see you all in there today.
Totally. Hey, Robert. Hey, Alexander. Victor, Nicole, Ben, Yeenling. Good to see you. So we have a pretty open program today. We're mostly going to talk about a lot of good stuff going on TV, because there's quite a lot of it now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a little teaser. Everyone watching, to blow your minds. Tomorrow, Thursday, March 20th, there are two episodes of TV going to drop for two different shows. And ooh, I'm going to go ahead and say that both of them are the best episodes of those shows that have yet been produced. One is called The Wheel of Time, and the other is called Severance, and you're not ready for either of them. But I've seen them both, because I am, you know, very special.
Okay, so I know that we're not ready for The Wheel of Time, but you're talking up Severance, too, and that's exciting, because I've been, I don't want to say my excitement's been middling. I've liked this season, but I'm ready for a finale that will blow me away. So that is exciting to hear, because I have not seen it. Because I am not that special.
We can discuss that later. But first of all, let's start with Wheel of Time, because this is a show we're really into. We've been enjoying it. And it feels like a lot of people are enjoying it, too, which is what we're all hoping for.
Yes. Yeah, I saw a review today from Eric Kane at Forbes that was shared around on Blue Sky, which I don't know if you're familiar with this dude, Eric Kane, Dan. He is a hater. He hates the things. And he used that one. I posted one of his reviews for The Witcher during season three, where he was like, if only it was faithful to the source material. Then he complained about a bunch of things that were like straight out of the book. He even likes this season of The Wheel of Time. So it seems like even the hater critics are coming around pretty hard on this season, because it's just good TV. It's hard to argue that it's anything other than good TV, really.
Well, what do you think is winning folk over? Because Wheel of Time had a bit of an interesting ramp up. First season was kind of a little wobbly. Folk were upset about it. Second season, I felt like it did have a better reputation. Why do you think they're coming around now?
Well, I think that the overall, I think there are two reasons here. I think that for a lot of the hardcore book reader peeps, which this, the one I just referenced, is not one of those. He has not read them all. But I think for a lot of the most hardcore book cloaks, or whatever we want to call them, people who are like
book cloaks.
Yeah, it's a play on white cloaks, but with the books.
People who
are very upset anytime there's any change. I think this is the most, I want to say faithful, even though it does make a lot of changes still. I think it's the most recognizable It's sure. Like if you look at the books and then you look at this season, it is the most recognizably similar season of any of them. But I think that it goes deeper than that, because I think there are a lot of people who haven't read the books who are falling in love with the show, who are all about this season. And I think that really started with, like, in my opinion, like late in season two, like halfway through season two, I felt like there was a palpable shift in like the general viewing crowd's excitement for this show. And I think they've run with that. So I think season three, like the production values are better. Writing is better. The acting, like the actors have been living in the characters longer, so they all are just way more natural at what they're doing. The locations are amazing. Like that's a thing this show has that a lot of other big fantasy shows are struggling with or can't compete with, because they film so much in studios or on one or two expansive sets like House of the Dragon. It's not a globe-trotting story. It's a drama that has mostly been in a few specific locations. And, you know, the Wheel of Time, we haven't even seen a lot of the locations yet this season. They're coming in future weeks, but it just has a gorgeous location photography. So I think there are a lot of reasons is the answer to that. Do you think there's any one specific thing, or why do you think it's winning people over at this point?
I agree with the commenters that say that Victor says the look of it leveled up. It's not as glossy as it looks like theme parks anymore, which is true. It does look more lived in and believable. And I can't tell if that's just me getting used to it, or if it's they actually upgrade, which I think they did actually upgrade. They like have some new camera stuff. It just does look more. They found their footing. Somebody talked about, John, that Jordan's first few books were a mess anyway. Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time. I don't know if I would go that far. I do think reading the Wheel of Time books, you can see the author kind of figuring things out as he goes a bit. I don't think they are as tight as or as comprehensive as the later ones are.
Yeah.
And the show had all of them to draw from right at the beginning, but there's also a sense of the show kind of finding its footing and gaining confidence as it goes on. This isn't being the most confident yet, which again is why we're all hoping and praying that it continues, because now that they've really gotten on a track, I'm down to see this through to the end. Mainly what clicked for me was there was always a sense in the show. I don't know how to put my finger on it. In the last two seasons, less so in season two than season one, that the characters in specific were not quite cohering for me as real people and a real set of folks who had real relationships and likes and dislikes and all of those things, like a human being, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just feels different this year. I think starting off with everyone together, it's from the book, but it's a really good choice. So we get a sense of who they are, what they mean to each other before they split up and go off separate journeys. Again, having a character like Matt is great because he can actually make jokes and add another level to it. Not everybody is dour all the time, always.
Totally.
And there's a looseness that I like. I'm always going to go for Matt. I liked like a silly scene like Matt being frustrated in his room alone in Tar Valon while Galad and Gawain, you know, go to Pound Town on all the novices in the White Tower in the rooms above him. And he can say, like, that's Gawain, that's Galad.
Yeah.
Like, it just adds a maybe juvenile, but still believable level of, I don't know, relatable TV comedy that I recognize and I like, and it makes me sympathize with him.
Yeah.
And, stuff like that. Like, the show has more levels this year, and I appreciate levels.
Yeah, I agree with that. It does have more levels, and I think it's important for these characters to feel like real people. And that small example, like those small moments, are what does that, I think. And Matt's like the perfect example of that, because that is what he's all about. Like, Matt is the person in this equation who I love the... So we're going to be talking full spoilers for the first three episodes here. So if you care about that, you don't want spoilers, I don't know what to tell you. Why are you here? But we're going to be talking a little bit about, no, not confrontational, just, you know, watch the show,
watchers.
I hate to spoil our watchers. There is a scene with Matt that is taken directly out of the books. I think it's the third one, maybe, where Siwan takes the horn from him I don't remember if she takes the horn from him in the book, but her whole speech about her uncle and how he was a layabout who liked gambling, but he died running into a burning building to save kids, and he wouldn't stop until he got the last one out. And then, like, will that be you, Matt? Are you like him? And Matt being like, I'm no hero. I just do what needs to be done. And Siwan is like, well, that's what all heroes do. They just do what needs to be done. Like, that is directly out of the book. But that's also, like, the exact sort of quiet little character moments we've really needed, where it's like, Matt is an, I don't want to say an everyman, because he's ridiculous. He's got past life memories that are making him super skilled and whatever. But, like, that's the tone of Matt, is a dude you could find yourself in a bar with. And yeah, I think season three is nailing so much of that stuff. Like, the characters. So the episode coming this week, which we will not spoil, but it is a big episode for Yosha Stradowski in particular as Rand. This is his season. And this week is like his episode, where it's like, this dude has clearly leveled up as an actor. So yeah, I think, you know, I know I'm prone to hyping things, but I think that the Wheel of Time, like, it's hard for me to imagine. I don't know. I just feel like it's going to end up being one of the best fantasy shows of the year. Like, I have no doubt. I think it's just way better than the previous seasons and most seasons of most of the fantasy show. Like, thinking of like Rings of Power and The Witcher. Like, I know House of the Dragon's second season had some amazing episodes, but was overall divisive. I don't see this being divisive by the end. I think people will have some complicated thoughts, but like, it's a good season of TV.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Well, okay, let me interrogate that for a second, because I agree it's really, really good. It's, but dare I say, becoming a rich text, because we have things like the middle-aged woman battle royale at the start of the season, where it's all special effects and it's getting cut in half and things blown up, which is great and awesome. Chandling looks really good this year.
It does.
And we have the smaller character moments with Matt and stuff. We have the comedy. We have, like, again, lots of different levels, which is nice. We have, as Victor says, like, different people going on stories that we can actually remember week to week. It does also seem to be cohering nicely.
Yeah, totally.
Speaking about the changes and some of the things that might get controversial, we've talked about adaptation before. I guess my question is, and I have a follow-up, don't worry, like, how do you know when you've gone too far? How do you know when you've adapted something in a way that kind of that goes over the line that separates necessary changes done for the sake of telling a story in a new medium, and then goes over into gratuitous changes that are done seemingly for not a good reason beyond the writer wanted to do them? And was the thing of the first episode one of those changes, where Moiraine and the first episode, Moiraine and Lanfear work together to basically attack the Four Rivers crew in an attempt to drive them apart? Because in the book, that does not happen. In the book, they are attacked, but it's kind of just because the One Power moves in mysterious ways. It's not done by Lanfear and Moiraine working together. It's not done by Lanfear, not done by either of them. But the show changed it so it's an intentional thing to drive them apart, because Moiraine thinks that Rand friends being around him might take him away from her. She wants to be the one to influence him.
Yeah, I think that it is tricky, because so I don't mind this change, because I think Moiraine, we don't really get her perspective in the books. There's always this feeling of, can anyone actually really, like, how trustworthy is Moiraine? Because she's always playing her cards close to her chest. She's always perfectly willing to manipulate people. And this story in particular, The Shadow Rising, is all about that push and pull with her and Rand, which I think the show is doing a good job with. Of the power dynamic is flipping, where Rand is now a little more comfortable in his role. Moraine still wants to manipulate him, but he is just not having it because he doesn't need her quite as much as he did in the past when he was a helpless farm boy with no defenses against the Shadow and whatever. In terms of the working with Lanfear, you know, again, there are just times where Moraine comes out of left field and it's like, how did she learn XYZ thing? We never really find out. The third book has her use this magic called Balefire that we haven't seen yet in the show, where she toasts one of the Forsaken, kills them. This has not happened in the show. I kind of doubt it will happen because that Forsaken is a very cuttable Forsaken. But that's the thing where it's always like, how did she learn this forbidden weave? We have no idea. I don't think a Forsaken taught her, but it's just a good example of like, Moraine has secrets. Full stop. She will always have secrets. And with Lanfear, there is a push and pull of whether characters can work with Lanfear or not. Not Moraine, but like Rand has some moments where he kind of does things with Lanfear's help. And I think the show has had to kind of like condense that idea, speed up that idea. So like, I like the fact that even though Moraine is working with Lanfear, it is, you know, Lan's there telling her this is a stupid idea. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. So there's that side. I think the other side of that is if they didn't do that, they had to explain what bubbles of evil are. And I don't think that's a concept the show has gotten into, because so for people who are just watching the show, bubbles of evil are essentially like random chance, bad shit happens moments where the pattern distorts around the pattern being like fate distorts around our characters and bad magical things can happen, like an axe flying around and trying to chop Perrin into bits. The show, instead of going with that, like, I don't want to say it's silly because I love me some Wheel of Time, but it's a less believable thing. I think viewers would have probably responded worse to that than just like, hey, these two women we know are very manipulative, have a manipulative idea because they want to manipulate the Dragon Reborn. So did that, like, was that a breaking moment for you, Dan? Like, because I really did not mind that at all.
It wasn't a breaking moment. I did remember the evil bubble thing. And yeah. When it started, I was like, oh, evil bubbles.
Yes.
And then I was learned, oh, no, they're going a different way from it. I don't think it crosses the line, but I do think it's something that could be legitimately talked about by, you know, reasonable people. I think it's an example of one of the things that might go up to it. I think they could have done evil bubbles just fine. I liked the evil bubbles.
Probably. No, I mean, I didn't mind the evil bubbles.
But I'm
bubbles.
Just wondering where the break might be, if there's going to be one. And I don't think there will be, unless Amazon forces it, because I said this before too, it does feel like the showrunner, Rafe Judkins, genuinely likes the material. You can kind of just feel it when you're watching something. And it feels like I felt like he always had the love, and now he has more the know-how. He had to kind of get up to that point, but the affection was never really in question.
Yeah, and I think so the point we're at too, so books 4, 5, 6 are kind of like the pound for pound cleanest, best, most adaptable books of the saga. I think like each one of them ends with like a monumental bang, to the point where like I think if they get to keep going, they will do the end of book 5 in season 4, they will do the end of book 6 in season 5. And then they'll have to figure out what the hell they're going to do after that. So I think that there's also an element of like, now they're at the nice, fairly clean part of the story, because as I think John Thomas said, like, not that the first three books are a mess necessarily, but they're like you said, Dan, you can feel that Robert Jordan was kind of finding his footing, and in The Shadow Rising, he has found it. Sure. I think for me, so I agree with what you said about like the love for the material being there. And I think that is why, that combined with the fact that the Wheel of Time is 15 books, 14 books and a prequel, that they are trying to adapt in 8 seasons. it is just no question. They will have to change a lot to do that. So it always gets grace for me because of that. And because of what happened with Matt's original actor, that they basically had to rewrite large swaths of season one and two. It always gets grace for me there. But I think that in terms of changes from the source material, the reason that the Wheel of Time works, that it has never felt a bridge too far for me, is because it always feels like they are rooted in the material in some way. They're doing it because they have a long game. Like, we haven't talked about it a lot, but there's foreshadowing for stuff from the very end of the series that's already in the show a lot. The where it becomes a bridge too far for me, I have two very specific examples of this. So like The Witcher season two, they basically said, we didn't think this book was very compelling or would be very fun to watch, so we made up our own story instead. And then they backtracked in season three and put like two of the big events that they cut that were like big events from that book that they said they didn't want to adapt. They plugged them back into the show because it turns out they were actually pretty good. So I think that's a good example. Like, I don't think this source material is good enough, so I'm not going to bother with it, is to me a bridge too far. And I think the other example that comes to mind, even though I liked parts of this, is Daemon Targaryen in House of the Dragon season two, where Ryan Condal, the showrunner of that show, basically he talks about it as his paradise lost with Daemon Targaryen. And it's like, that's cool, but that's not relevant to the story whatsoever. Like, that's basically you had a fun fantasy idea you wanted to do and said, hey, I could do it in this show, instead of like telling the story that the book was telling the story the story is about. So I think those are some examples of like a bridge too far in my mind. It's kind of when the material's thrown out because they don't want to bother with it or don't think it's good enough, versus we need to change things because that's the only way to make this work on television.
Yeah, I mean, my example of House of the Dragon is always going to be Allison and Rhaenyra being enemies in the book and then working together into the show. Like, if you're doing the opposite of what the book says, yeah, I think we can all agree you need to reconsider.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to change things or alter things or squeeze things, but you can't do the opposite. Then you're not adapting the book.
Well, let me make a counterpoint here using your favorite episode of television of all time.
We have to talk about those.
Bill and Frank from The Last of Us. This is a good example of where they did the opposite. And I don't just mean that they showed Bill and Frank alive. Bill and Frank have a tragic ending in the video game. This is The Last of Us, the third episode, long, long time. In the video game, Frank tries to leave Bill, gets bit by a clicker, and then hangs himself. And you find this out later. And he like leaves a letter where it's like, you're the worst, Bill. I would do anything to get away from you. Yeah. And this is how it played out. So the show did like explicitly the opposite of that, where it gives them, you know, it is a happy ending for Bill and Frank, even though they pass away. They do it together on their own terms. But that worked. Why did that work? And some of these other examples don't.
You don't think I have a counterpoint to your counterpoint?
Oh, I love it. I was hoping you did.
Okay. The reason they can get away with that is twofold. The first fold is they just did a really good job of it. I guess I would qualify. If you do the opposite and it's awesome, then I guess you can get away with it. Dicey. But the reason they could do it with Bill and Frank, the second fold, is that Bill and Frank really aren't that important. Bill and Frank are side characters.
That's true.
You have more leeway here. If you're Allison Rhaenyra and you've made them the central characters, is a lot more focus on that. And the risk that you do the opposite and get away with it is much, 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 much higher. The stakes are much higher. And the, I would say, necessity of sticking to the source material becomes much more pertinent.
Yeah.
The more important central they are to the story. Bill and Frank, them hate each other isn't that important to the sort of The Last of Us.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. It's not. So I think that is fair. And I think, either way, they had, you know, Bill and Frank's story is there to kind of drive home some of the realities of this world that Ellie and Joel live in. But the specific details of their story don't, they're much more open to interpretation. And I think that that is a good example of like, yeah, adapt this, make it as compelling as you can for good TV. But the overall arc of the thing is not going to change much. Bill and Frank are still, you know, Bill doesn't actually technically die in the games. So you just leave him there. Sure. But presumably he won't last. So it's like, you know, making a more conclusive, dramatic thing. So, yeah, I think that that is a good point. I think that is totally fair.
The last thing I want to say is tomorrow, the episode of the time, we can't say spoilers, but I think people are going to love it. I think people are going to really eat this one up, especially book fans. I think actually I'm most curious to see if people who haven't read the books react, because it goes so, again, no spoilers, but it goes so deep into the lore of the Wheel of Time world in a way that draws a lot from the book. Book fans are going to have like aneurysms of joy seeing some stuff on screen. It is also pretty esoteric and more experimental than most of the episodes have been so far, kind of full of visions and mystical things of that nature, which are totally Wheel of Time fine. They fit in this universe more than they do in, say, House of the Dragon or Game of Thrones.
They do.
I wonder if it might not be, I think it'll interest people who don't follow the books, but I think it might be harder to follow.
Yes and no. I think it will be harder to follow in general, like to get all the details of, let's put it that way, because I think it does go deep into the lore, like you said. There are a lot of very lore specific details that are a part of that. But I think the premise of what the episode is something that is more broadly accessible than I think we are, maybe our gut is to give it credit for, having to do with Rand and his ancestry, we can say. So I think, I'm very curious to see how people react. I think it is arguably the best episode of the series to date.
It's the best episode of the series so far.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say that.
Yeah,
also, filmically, quite beautiful and really well done, which, if it is a little confusing, can really pull you along. Like, I didn't understand everything that was happening, but it's gorgeous to watch. Very compellingly edited. So I was pulled along, no problem. Yes. I love it. And I think I might rewatch it tonight so I can get ready.
Yeah, I won't lie. I've seen it a few times. It's a good episode. I can't wait. Can't wait for people to watch it. John Thomas has a pretty good example of, you know, the sort of condensing the Wheel of Time maybe doesn't have to do, but it's prudent for them to do. So in the third episode, Lanfear pulls Rand into her dream. She says he pulled her into his dream. I don't buy that because it's Lanfear. She tells Rand her plan is to find a way to kill the Dark One so she can be free of her dark oaths. And she says there is a Sa'angriel, which are, these are very powerful magical artifacts, that there are two. There's one for men and one for women. The one for men is Kalendor, which is the sword Rand left in the Stone of Tyr. The one for women is something called the Sarkonnen. And I don't believe the name Sarkonnen is from the books. I may be mistaken.
I was going to ask you, is that from the books at all? I don't remember it.
So there are this idea is from the books, but this specific thing she's mentioning is not. In the books, there's Kalendor, the sword. And then there are these other very powerful Sa'angriel called the Choden Kal, which it's basically a small little Buddha figure that when you channel into it, it taps into a massive Buddha figure that is half buried, that is filled with the one power. So there's one of those for men and women. So there are three of these very powerful artifacts. They're not, the sword is not connected to the Choden Kal, but all three of them are relevant at certain points. Rand ends up, if I remember right, with Kalendor and the Choden Kal for men. So it's, the face you just made, this is the perfect example of where they were like, we could just make this a little simpler for viewers and say there's just these two things and they do these two explicit things and we don't need to explain that this little thing is connected to a big thing and there's one of these for each of us, but also this other thing. So there's so much room for that sort of stuff in the Wheel of Time that I think from an adaptation perspective, it's fascinating. I think it's a fascinating series to dig into that stuff with, more than most.
I like how we should move on, but I think Jordan was pretty good at making up all this language and stuff. They do sound nicely exotic in the mouth.
Yeah.
I don't remember half the words you just said, but I like the sound of them. And yeah, Julie, it's a good one. Check back next week. We'll talk about it. I'd love to hear everybody's thoughts. Scratch that. Let's move on to something else. Just watch tomorrow. You're going to love it. Yes. And we'll talk about it later.
Yes. Come back and comment tomorrow.
Yeah. What else is going on in the worlds of sci-fi, fantasy movies, TV, swords, space, lasers, knights, and magic ladies?
There are other things. Yeah, apparently there are other things. Thank you, John, for shouting out. Apparently the Sarkonnen is from a short story involving Damon Dread and A Memory of Light. I need to go back and reread those. But anyway. We're moving out of Randland now to Westeros because a behind-the-scenes picture has surfaced from A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. This was posted on Twitter. I don't remember who by. I don't know if you remember, Dan. House the Dragons, maybe?
I think it was House the Dragons, yeah.
It's hard to talk too much about this without getting into spoilers. This is a scene from late in the Hedge Knight, the novella, the Hedge Knight. Mm-hmm. How much do we want to talk about spoilers here, Dan? Because you haven't read it. So how do you want to talk about this? This is a very iconic scene from the book.
I don't think we need to say exactly what happens. This show is coming later this year, this new Game of Thrones prequel show based on the Hedge Knight, like you said. I know that this is the same as it looks like in the illustrations. This is our main character, Sir Duncan the Tall, on a horse, in some yellow armor with a helmet. I will say, because it's the same as the illustrations, it does kind of underline what we've heard about it being very faithful to the source material. It looks like they're trying to really translate Martin's prose accurately to the screen, which I don't know. I think me and Martin have been on a fidelity kick lately, and I'm happy about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is exciting. So this specific shot, again, this is the climax of presumably the season. So I don't want to talk about what it is aside from to say this specific thing that is going down in this scene is a bit of lore that is in the Game of Thrones books that never actually happens. It's related to a certain type of trial by combat that never actually happens in the Game of Thrones books that we've seen so far, but it does happen in A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And it's going to be awesome. It's going to be, I think, when Martin has said on his blog, like, they filmed a battle scene, or maybe it was Francesca Orsi from HBO. Someone said they filmed battle scenes that were just as spectacular as anything in Game of Thrones. And I rolled my eyes because there are no dragons, there are no armies or whatever in this. But when they say that, presumably the scene we're looking at here is the scene they're talking about, because it is the big climactic moment. Probably episode 5 would be my guess as to when we'll see this scene play out. Because it's only 6 episodes long. And yeah, Julie says, it's about time you read Duncan Egg, Dan. Julie's calling you out in the comments.
You're totally right. I never find the right time. Like I'm making a plan to just do the entire thing this weekend. I want like the right environment. I don't know why I'm so picky about
mood,
this.
You need mood candles and stuff?
I don't need mood. Yeah, I need to draw a bubble bath, put some candles on.
I mean, that doesn't sound bad.
I don't know. I wanted the right environment, and I'm taking active steps to get it. And my tentative plan is for this week and just go through the whole thing. Because you're right, it's not long.
Just the Hedge Knight. You don't need to go into the Sworn Sword this weekend, but it is really like a one or two sitting read. Like it's fairly compact. It's only like 100 pages long and it will pull you through because it is Martin writing well. You'll get the nice reminder of, this is what good George R. R. Martin is like, because it is a very good story.
Like, I'm not kidding. I did read the first few pages and like I was really enjoying it, and I like laughed out loud at a few jokes, and I was like, this is too good. I shouldn't read this at like 11:30 before I go to bed on the couch where it's like it's too cold in here. I need to I need to have the right space, and I'm gonna get it.
Okay.
I'm gonna get it.
Okay. Well, I hope that you do. You deserve it, Dan. You deserve an evening with Sir Duncan the Tall. And
have
his...
you ever like played a really long video game and then you got near the end and you're like, I don't. And then I like you stop playing because if you keep playing, it means it's over.
Oh, absolutely.
I feel that way a little bit about this. I feel like it's might be the last George R. Martin thing I ever read unless he releases The Winds of Winter. And
he's got lots of other works. You could always hit
sorry,
up.
Sorry, I'll amend. Dream, George R. Martin thing about the Westeros stuff.
Okay, maybe, that's fair. That is fair, and you know, I on the plus side, you can always stretch it out with the Mystery Knight. You can blast through the Hedge Knight. You can maybe dip your toes into the Sworn Sword, and then the Mystery Knight you can put off for like 3 years.
I'm not worried at all. Anyway,
yeah, I totally know the feeling you mean, and that is fair.
Because I do have something of a block. I won't deny it. I felt it. It's bizarre. Okay. Speaking of George R. R. Martin, he's been out there. We're not going to spend too long on this. He's been talking a lot about in the Lost Lands that turd of a movie based on his show that came out a couple of weeks ago. Based on his short story. And the movie itself, from what I didn't see it, but according to what I've heard, is I don't think it's going to be winning any Oscars. But he has gotten to talk a lot and just kind of air some of his thoughts about things and stuff.
Yeah.
Such as talking about the Game of Thrones prequel shows. We know there were a bunch sort of in varying stages of development that may go forward, may not. And he's, you know, pretty realistic about it, saying that, you know, some of them put in the shelves. They might come back. They might not. Things in TV all are never 100% dead. Nothing dies forever in television, which is, again, something we know. But so if anybody's holding out hope for a Jon Snow series, just because the shelf doesn't mean they can't come back eventually. That's nice.
Yeah.
He really wants to adapt this novel Fever Dream he wrote before Game of Thrones. Have you read that one?
I have. Fever Dream. He says, I think this is maybe his favorite child, talking about his books as children. Fever Dream, which he said until he started Game of Thrones was definitely the best of his preceding novels. Completely true. Fever Dream is a really, really good book. It's a standalone, like 300 or 400 page vampire novel set on the, like in the Mississippi River 19th century steamboat era. And it's about this crotchety old steamboat captain named Abner Marsh, who gets contracted to transport a spooky guy who mostly only comes out at night up and down the river on some secret mission, who we learn very swiftly is a vampire. And it's got like vampire politics. Like it is a George R. R. Martin story through and through. It's really, really good. So I'm not surprised to hear him say this because, like, you know, I'm pretty sure like Martin's company that he like runs a lot of his local businesses out of is like the Fever River Packet. It's named after this book. I'm not surprised. Fever Dream deserves it. Damn it. It is a great book. And it, you know, there are no spaceships. There are no aliens. They just need some steamboats. Do you think you'll ever read it?
Yeah, honestly, why not? Sounds good. I'm probably going to try and read the next three Body Problem book.
Oh, nice. What's that? The Dark Forest? I still need to read those.
It's a good title. No one cares what George R. Martin thinks anymore, so we can just skip to the next thing. But
wait, there's one thing I wanted to say. For anyone who read this thing about Fever Dream that Collider wrote about this week, because they're the ones who talked to him, he said he wrote a script for this with Disney that didn't go through. And he has the script back. He has the screenplay. He wants someone to adapt his screenplay. He doesn't want a new writer, which is funny, but he's in his old age. He's had a lot of adaptations, and this is obviously an important one to him. Fair. He said, we've had interest from at least three fairly major directors, two of whom I love, which I think he said sorry to that third director. Which is kind
not
of funny.
Not quite on the level of the other two. I love when people get old and they just say things that may be a little uncouth or maybe a little hurtful if you think it the wrong way. But I mean, who cares anymore? I'm sure that person will be fine, but it is funny. Like, we have three directors interested. two were good. The other one, I don't know. Like, if that person reads, I don't know who it is. Quentin Tarantino's like sobbing into his breakfast. It's very funny.
Yeah, yeah. So I did want to just mention that we do know who one of the ones he loves is, because he mentioned this during our interview with him last year. It's Guillermo del Toro.
So of course.
Yeah. So he has had meetings with Guillermo del Toro about making the Fever Dream movie, and they just haven't been able to make it work because Guillermo del Toro is always busy with other projects.
I feel like Guillermo del Toro has like a list of like 30,000 projects he started but didn't quite finish. Like, that guy is a long rap sheet. But man,
Say Guillermo del Toro has that rap?
Yes.
Because that sounds shockingly like George R. R. Martin as well. So this sounds like a match made in heaven here.
Oh, it does. Whenever Guillermo del Toro does a movie, it's wonderful. He is basically my favorite movies ever. Yeah. I remember watching the Shape of Water in theaters and just being like, rapt, shut up, couldn't tear my eyes away the entire time. Yeah. Especially when that won the Oscar. That was a great one.
Yeah, I enjoyed his Hellboy movies, too.
They're
the best Hellboy movies we've gotten, with Ron Perlman, who Martin wants to play Abner Marsh, Steamboat Captain, because he's even like, I would love Ron Perlman to play this part, is something he said. So, yeah, I could totally see it.
Let's move on to what are we watching? Do you want something else to say about George R. R. Martin and such?
Nah, I don't think so. He empathizes with Frank Herbert. We don't have time for that. So you can go on winteriscoming.net and read about George R. R. Martin's thoughts about Frank Herbert and why George R. R. Martin and Frank Herbert are similar at this point in their lives. But yeah, here's the question, Dan, and all of you in the chat. Victor's already answering it. He's ahead of the game. What are you watching, reading, experiencing in this mortal coil this
week? You like it and why? I've been watching a ton, so I want to talk about this. Okay. I haven't gotten to Adolescence, even though I've heard great things about it. Victor's loving it. I got all the Wheel of Time ahead of time, so I had to, I like blitzed through that before they took it away. The Severance finale tomorrow. Again, I'm not going to spoil the actual details. I feel like I've liked the season more than other people have, perhaps because I'm reviewing it and I just get to sit with it and think about it. I think there's a lot of great detail to find there. I think the finale will impress people. Severance has this great mix of intense seriousness and complete goofy absurdity, where it's like we're talking about this modern day slavery system, basically, and the people are kidnapping women and putting them through horrible tests. But also you have watermelons shaped like John Turturro's head, and you go to his funeral. That to me is like the quintessential Severance tone. And there was a lot of that in this finale. We're just the intense seriousness next to the utter absurdity. It is the surrealist show of our time is Severance. I think it makes good on a lot of big questions and a lot of good conflicts. The characters we like are back firmly in the driver's seat. I know that has been a bit of an issue this year, where it feels like they've kind of gotten away from itself in some ways. It takes a big step forward, but not so big that I can't see like where a third season could go. I think it's perfect. Okay. It answers questions that you have, but it doesn't answer every question, so it leaves something open. And it's made gorgeously with a really deft touch for us, the dramatic and the comedic. I thought it was great. I think people are going to love this. I really do.
Cool. That's exciting. So I've been kind of like in the middle of the road with Severance. I've really enjoyed some episodes. I've kind of liked other ones. I've generally struggled a little with the pacing of it in terms of when it's making promises and then kind of stringing us. I don't like when it feels like a show is holding back answers for the sake of holding back the answers. Like, make it feel natural. So it really feels like this season of Severance is one of those seasons of television where the finale could really, solidify it as a really good season for people or frustrate them, because, it's a mystery box show. So much hinges on what answers we get and what ones it holds back and how well that all works. So I'm excited by the things you're saying, because I did like the last episode quite a bit. Last episode, I really enjoyed getting back to those main characters, especially Mark, because, Mark's got interesting stuff going on. So this I want to see that.
The finale is easily the best Mark episode in the series. He has some great stuff I did not see coming, but that I've been waiting for a long time. But you only realize that once you see it, which I like.
Okay.
I have not seen House of Dick. We're talking about that. I haven't found time for that, but I hear that's really good too. It's definitely catching on in Prime Video. I think right now I want to see the Wheel of Time in the front spot. It's behind Reacher, which is also airing new episodes.
Yeah.
And then like House of David is like cropping up behind Invincible. Invincible was great too. Last week, the finale, it was great. I was a little more like you are with Severance on this season. I thought it kind of was a little, low impact for a bunch of it. And then the last two episodes of this third season, you could see, they were saving all the money and all the twists for these final two. I get it. Okay. You got away with it. Yeah. Fine. I'm cool with this. Because those last two were really excellent and exciting.
That's awesome. Yeah. Invincible is one of those shows I keep meaning to start and I haven't. And I need to because I like Robert Kirkman. I like the voice cast of that show. I like J.K. Simmons, but I just haven't quite gotten to it yet. But everyone I've talked to who watched the finale has been raving about it. So it seems like the finale really stuck the landing this season. So I'm watching Severance. I've been deep into Wheel of Time land because I'm reviewing it on the site. I've been writing about it a lot. So I have watched some episodes many times at this point and am really enjoying it. I'm in my glory here in Wheel of Time season 3. I also watched the old movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Conan the Destroyer, which is the sequel to Conan the Barbarian. Have you seen the original Conan the Barbarian movie, Dan?
Yes, I have seen both of these films.
Okay, so I had never seen the second one. Was just okay. The original, I was honestly pretty impressed. It holds up way better than I expected because it's
I agree.
You know, it's got a great villain performance from James Earl Jones. Mm-hmm. Arnold Schwarzenegger's got like 10 lines in the whole movie. Like he really doesn't talk a lot, so it's like much artsier than you would expect because it's got a lot of just silent shots and stuff like that. But yeah. It's been fun to visit those. He punched a camel in the face in this movie and a horse in the face. So that was a good time.
It's got Grace Jones in it.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah.
Yes.
That's mostly what I've been up to. Wheel of Time's just been eating my television viewing hours. I watched a little bit of Reacher, too, which is not bad.
I actually watched a little bit of Reacher myself to just...
Nice.
I got it. Everyone loves this. I need to check this out.
Yeah.
I thought it was, I don't know. It wasn't, I think we talked about it before. I thought it was okay. I'm not sure. I'll keep watching.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife, she binge watched the first season in like a day, just like put it on in the background. So I've seen bits from the first and second seasons and have enjoyed what I've seen. But, you know, I haven't sat down and properly immersed myself in the Big Man Punches Stuff show.
Dude,
but I do really enjoy the humor. I think the humor in that show is pretty fun. So
I was still mad at them for dissing the Ethel Merman disco record, frankly. Some good comments, by the way, on Invincible. I do agree with Victor. Invincible will be an all-time classic if death wasn't so meaningless. It has serious superhero syndrome where if somebody dies, like, yeah, they ain't coming back. Or they're coming back. Violence and gore ends up being just for the sake of its own spectacle. I kind of agree, but man, when they turn up the spectacle, I stop caring. Like these last two were such on a high level when it came to that spectacle. I didn't mind, but I do agree with you. It does play a little too fast and loose with death and life and the thing that superhero fiction does way too often, which is just somebody dies and then they just come right back.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of heroes, I've been enjoying Daredevil, Born Again. I've been liking that too.
Man, I have decided I wasn't really interested enough to resubscribe to Disney Plus for it. So I have not watched it yet out of corporate angst. But so you're saying it's been pretty good. It's been worth it. Even with writing Karen and Foggy out in that first episode, you're on board still.
Yeah, I mean, that was funny. I forget the name. It's like Dario's got something Italian. Seems like he has a vision a direction. The character drama is definitely on, I would say, another level than most Disney Plus Marvel shows. It does seem like it's a carefully written and considered show. Like, there's a legal dimensions. There's it's held my interest. It also, I'm always nervous watching it because it does have the little, like, I don't know, MCU ending-esque teases that always makes me wonder, are you stringing me along for some reason? But so far, it's paid off things. So I'm interested. Cool. Yeah, I think it's well done.
Can I ask you, how do you think it holds up to the original seasons of Daredevil on Netflix?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I watched those, but it was years ago. I was a young man in my... I think it was in my 20s at that point. It feels like it's about the same to me.
Okay, fair. I rewatched them. I don't remember when She-Hulk was on, I think was the last time I watched them because he was in that.
You're not counting that as original Daredevil season.
No, I'm saying that was my reason to rewatch it. Knowing they were bringing him onto that show, I was like, okay, time to revisit Daredevil.
Gotcha.
But that's, my big question with this new Daredevil show is how well it holds up, because I think we're just in this era of diminishing returns with rebooting and extending franchises and stuff, and having Daredevil make the leap from Netflix, its very acclaimed Netflix seasons, to Disney Plus feels like it could be in danger of being the epitome of that, but I'm glad that you've been enjoying it so far.
Oh, there's so much worse than that. For this example, Daredevil at least will not be like exhibit A when you go to show how shows shouldn't be rebooted. It might not get in the Reboot Hall of Fame, but it's not shaming itself by any means.
Okay, that's good. Good. Well, I'm happy for it. I always wish Daredevil was one of those shows that was like killed by mergers kind of at its prime. It was one of those shows that got canceled through no fault of its own, kind of at the height of its popularity. Yeah, yeah. And then Disney decided to consolidate its streaming stuff and not license to Netflix anymore. So that was unfortunate. And I'm glad that it is getting another run at life, because Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin and Charlie Cox as Daredevil are just... good. Yeah, they're so good in those roles. So, yeah.
It is weird that Foggy and Karen are written out, but there's a really juicy role for the Kingpin's wife, Vanessa, who is like a smaller character on that show. But whatever, I buy it.
I mean, Vanessa was important in the original three seasons,
she
too.
She was, but so were Foggy and Karen.
Were they? No, of course they were. That's Sorry, Foggy and Karen, I love you. Yeah, no, obviously you're right.
Anyway, there's a ton of TV to watch. I've never watched Yellow. I've never gotten around to it. Julie's watching that. I'm trying to watch The White Lotus, and I've had to like back up three episodes because I'm watching too much else.
Yeah, and it's wild to think that The Last of Us will be out in less than a month.
It is wild to think that.
Devil May Cry, which I know you are dying to watch, is out in 2 weeks.
You can go ahead and watch that one for me.
I will. I shall. I cannot wait. That's from the dude who made the first season of Castlevania. So
Andor is coming out next month.
What? Can that be true? Is that a true thing?
It's like the later end of it, but yeah, there's way too much. Down.
When do these companies think we have time? It is our full-time job to watch and report on these things, and we don't even have time. When does the average viewer have time to watch all these shows?
I don't know. Why don't we try to condense the chaos and enormousness of life into several or eight bullet points as we go through the WIC News lightning round. We look at some stories we couldn't get to the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions. That's how you want to fit in all these TV shows. Just get the 20-second version of them. We're going to give you the 20-second versions of everything you need to know right now.
Nice. Well, the studios agree with you, except their version is 8 episode seasons. Let's do it.
All right. How should we start?
That is a great question. Why don't I ask you first?
Hit me.
Because I want to talk about Aaron Paul. So the new Percy Jackson show It's been renewed for season 3. It got an early renewal. Season 2 is coming out in December.
Good for it. You know, it's a bit aimed at people who are younger than I am. But it was good. It was nice. It was well put together. Earnest. Faithful. High-spirited youngsters fighting the power. Yay. I'm glad for the fans. We'll just wait for the buzzer to sound. There it
is. That was so good. The buzzer was miles off.
Hey, under time. Daniel.
Yes.
Breaking Bad veteran Aaron Paul, who also appeared in Westworld, is still hoping that they can make a fifth and final season.
Poor Aaron Paul. I mean, I would watch a fifth season of Westworld, but Westworld just, you know, its viewership just declined season over season. And Aaron Paul kind of came on halfway through. It always felt like he was kind of left a little half finished. He didn't really get a full story. Mm-hmm. So that's unfortunate. You, me, and very few other people are waiting for that, Aaron Paul. all right. Here's one. So Sadie Sink, that is Max in Stranger Things.
There you go.
There were rumors going around she was going to be playing Jean Grey in the X-Men in the MCU, and she said, quote, "It's news to me."
That's what I assumed that she would play when it was announced she was joining the Spider-Man movie. Like, okay, if they want to be in the X-Men, she has red hair, Jean Grey. And then you said, oh, she'll play Mary Jane Watson, Spider-Man's girlfriend. I'm like, wait, didn't they already have that? And you were like, no. Zendaya played some other person, also the initials MJ, who wasn't Mary Jane Watson. I'm like, oh, I didn't even realize that. So I don't know.
Yeah,
she end was of, end of comment.
Michelle Jones Watson. So the MCU does what it wants.
Famed fantasy author Brandon Sanderson named his 10 favorite video games, and his most beloved one, his favorite, is Civilization 6. What does that mean, Daniel?
So Civilization 6 is a builder game where you build up civilizations, go to war, build, you know, all wonders, all that sort of stuff. I think this is hilarious. One, his list is great. Go look at it. But I think this is funny because his recent Cosmere books feel like a game of Civilization where it's all the worlds at different technology levels. So when I read that, I was like, of course Civ 6 is your favorite game, Brandon Sanderson. You see it in the books. All right. From the Cosmere, we go to Narnia for this next one. Yes, Aslan's on the move, and so is Daniel Craig. He is reportedly in consideration for Netflix's Narnia movies, which I guess are going to start with The Magician's Nephew?
Yeah, which is the first chronological book in the series. I've read all the Narnia books. I know that Magician's Nephew was written like later, but it is what happens first. And Daniel Craig could play the weird uncle who first makes a portal to Narnia. I think it sounds fine. I know that we had an editorial where one of a really good writer argued that it was a bad idea, but I don't really see it's a bad idea. Start at the start. Fine. Go ahead, Barbie girl. Greta Gerwig. Have fun.
I trust Greta Gerwig. I think if she's doing it, it's for a good reason.
Sure. I didn't know this. Daniel, apparently Amazon Prime Video has greenlit its God of War TV show based on the popular video games for 2 seasons.
Yeah, so this is from an interview with Ronald D. Moore, who's the showrunner of it now after The Wheel of Time's Rafe Judkins left the production. Ronald Moore did Battlestar Galactica and Outlander. He's doing God of War. He just kind of casually dropped that Amazon had invested in 2 seasons of the show. So presumably that's the God of War reboot and God of War Ragnarok, the newest two. I doubt they're taking Kratos back to Greece. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. This is a cool one. So HBO is launching an ASL version of The Last of Us. CODA star Daniel Durant will interpret.
Yes. Okay. Apparently, The Last of Us games are very keep deaf people in mind with a lot of like kind of physical movements to kind of signal things. And this new version of The Last of Us Season 1 will have this actor in the corner doing ASL sign language throughout the entire thing.
That's cool.
Which is cool. Yeah, they're making efforts to broaden the appeal to lots of different kinds of audiences. Good for them.
Yeah, that's especially cool because there was a deaf character in the show who was not deaf in the game. They added that, so
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense on multiple levels there.
And finally, I'm sorry to disappoint you, Dan, because you hate Severance so much.
I do.
But Severance has now become...
I hate Lumen.
Sure you do. Good save. But Severance has now become the most popular show on Apple TV+, surpassing even your beloved Ted Lasso.
I mean, I like Ted Lasso. I haven't seen the newest season, but if I had to choose between Ted Lasso and any sci-fi fantasy show, I would say bring on the sci-fi fantasy. So good for you, Severance. Teach Apple TV what the people want so we can get more of it. Thank you for your service at Lumen, where the work is mysterious and important.
And that's our show. Thanks, everybody. Check back in next week, Wednesday, every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. We're talking about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, etc. Julie's saying nothing turned into my head tonight. I have a vague plan. We'll see if it goes through. I'm going to read it. It might not. Hopefully, it'll be next week. We'll see.
There's pressure here. People want to hear your thoughts, Dan.
Thank you for keeping me honest. Also, subscribe. Like, comment, you're already doing that. If you enjoyed our show, and if you didn't enjoy our show, you know what? Go ahead, like, subscribe, and comment anyway. I'll remove the tyranny of choice from your life. Just, it's really easy. All you gotta do is like, comment, and subscribe, and share the video with, you know, your parents, your brothers, your friends, your priests, whoever you can, until we have 100,000,000 subscribers. Thanks for watching. Glad you're here. Enjoy your afternoon, your night, or your morning, whatever it happens to be. And we'll see you very soon. Goodbye.
All right. Take care.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.